Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, November 4th. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, powerful atmospheric river storm hits Humboldt today, kicking off Humboldt storm season. North Coast nonprofits losing millions due to federal actions. Nonprofits work together to support Humboldt community during government shutdown. Stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.
A strong atmospheric storm will be moving in tonight and persisting through Wednesday, bringing up to 3 to 6 inches of rain and high winds up to 60 miles per hour, Nat Cardos reports.
Storm season is here in Humboldt County, and so is the first strong Pacific atmospheric storm that will be moving in tonight and persisting till Wednesday afternoon. The National News Service in Eureka has issued a high wind watch for the coastal area, as peak gusts will be reaching up to 50 to 60 miles per hour near the coast and exposed ridges, and inland winds will see up to 30 to 45 miles per hour gusts through tonight to Wednesday morning. KMUD News spoke to Megan McFarland, spokesperson for PG&E, for more information on the kinds of effects that the high winds will have.
So when we see heavy rains and high winds, especially like earlier in the year, it can impact the vegetation in the area. So if a tree has sort of a loose tree branch or you know, loose limbs, the high winds and heavy rains can actually knock that into PG&E's power lines and create damage, which creates reliability issues. So sometimes during storms, we'll actually get our vegetation management crews out there in advance of the storm to do extra precautionary tree trimming near our distribution lines and transmission lines.
High winds have the potential to break tree branches and cause road hazards, property destruction, and more. Be sure to secure any outdoor loose objects before the winds reach peak tonight and to avoid being under trees during the storm. KMUD News spoke with Kathleen Zantos, the service hydrologist at the National Weather Service in Eureka, for more information on the storm's high winds in Humboldt.
The winds are going to be very strong tonight. The strongest winds are going to be at the highest elevations and along the immediate coast. We could see gusts up to 60 miles an hour and then 70 miles an hour on like high terrain. And so these are dangerous, destructive winds. They're going to peak late tonight. And that's another safety issue. We encourage people not to be driving, avoid being under trees during that time frame, because those winds are strong enough to cause branches to fall, and that could seriously hurt or kill someone.
As we have already been seeing today, heavy rain will be coming along with the storm, with 3 to 6 inches expected along the coast and coastal ranges, and 1.5 to 3 inches expected inland. Localized flooding on small creeks, low-lying roads, and poor drainage areas is also possible, so make sure not to travel unless absolutely mandatory during the storm. Zantos explains more about potential flooding in Humboldt.
Definitely around Humboldt Bay area, including like but kind of like freshwater, some of these small stream and Jacoby Creek, some of these small stream areas that we tend to see flooding impacts when there is heavy rain. It's very possible in those frequent areas, but also in town and some urban areas where the storm drains could get overwhelmed with a lot of water at once. So a little bit of everywhere, but right now we're thinking about just like a lot of those typical frequent flood areas in the wintertime. But the good news, main stem rivers aren't a concern with this event. Those rivers will rise. There's going to be water flowing through them, but they're going to remain well below flood stage. We do have coastal flooding concerns, too. That's like from high tide flooding, so saltwater flooding of just low areas around Humboldt Bay and maybe some low spots along the coast. And so there's high astronomical tides, and with south prolonged south winds, that can cause a little bit of a storm surge to make the water levels a little higher. And so around high tide the next few days, we could see some of these low areas that might not see saltwater flooding during high tide. Some of those really low areas could see some saltwater flooding. So just another element to add on top of all the water stuff going on.
Winds are expected to peak late tonight through tomorrow morning, with conditions gradually improving Wednesday night into Thursday. Thunderstorms are expected along the coast tomorrow morning as well. And Zantos elaborates more on safety tips during the storm.
The thing we've been telling people right now, since the storm's on its way, the winds are going to start increasing tonight. When you're driving home from work or this evening, just make sure you slow down, give yourself a little extra time to get home or to get wherever you're going. That's when we're going to start seeing more rain, and that's when we're going to start seeing the winds increase. And both of those combined just make driving conditions really poor. So just take it easy. Make sure you have your lights on. And then once you get home, if there's anything else you need to kind of secure before the stronger winds tonight, I would do that too. And then it's the same thing for tomorrow morning. There's still going to be rain. There's still going to be some winds for coastal areas. There could be some stronger thunderstorms. So again, when people are headed off to work, we encourage you to allow for a little extra time, drive slower, especially if you see dark clouds ahead. That's kind of your signal to slow down and at least like anticipate a downpour ahead and maybe some strong gusty winds. Anytime we see winds, rain, heavy rain combined, it just makes it that much harder to drive safely.
PG&E encourages customers to update contact information and to know where to find outage information, which can be found either on the website pgne.com/outages or the outage information line at 1-800-743-5002. McFarland explains more on how people can stay safe during the storm.
PG&E is prepared for the storm, and we want our customers to be prepared too. One thing people can do right now while the weather is calm is go to PG&E's website, pge.com, and update your contact information. This way, PG&E can contact you. If the power goes out in their area, they can let you know when crews are en route, what repairs need to be made, and the estimated time of restoration. That's a really helpful resource. You can enter contact information for friends and family, too, so you could get update on your parents' house or an elderly neighbor's. Another thing that customers should do is if you do lose power, we want customers to be safe. We recommend using flashlights and not candles. Have your flashlights ready, extra batteries, make sure they're working. And then finally, a safety tip. Sometimes when we see these heavy rains, high winds, we will see power lines coming down. If you're out and about in your community and you see a down power line, assume that it is energized, call 911, call PG&E, and we will come out and make the area safe.
To stay informed on weather forecasts during the storm, the website is weather.gov/EKA. For Caltrans road conditions, the website is quickmap.ca.gov. And the Humboldt County Office of Emergency Services website is humboldt.gov.org/OES. This is Nat Cardos reporting for KMUN News.
The North Coast nonprofit groups are dealing with the consequences of federal actions, including the loss of millions of dollars of funding. Daniel Mintz reports.
Surveying of North Coast nonprofit groups shows how federal actions have affected financial stability, programs, and employees. Those impacts were detailed during an October 29th online meeting of the Community Economic Resilience Consortium. Surveying of nonprofit groups by the Northern California Association of Nonprofits, NORCAN, between August and September included responses from 54 nonprofits in Humboldt, Del Norte, and Trinity counties. Changing Tides Family Services Executive Director Kerry Venegas presented the survey's striking findings. Just this year, there's been a collective loss of almost $7 million. The survey also reports $2 million in delayed reimbursements and the closure or reduction of 33 programs, which has affected 2,333 clients. And the targeting of diversity, equity, and inclusion policies affects how nonprofits can communicate and carry out their work, Venegas said.
20% of the surveyed organizations have scaled back their DEI practices, otherwise known as equity or diversity, under compliance pressures. I am sure that many of you saw some of the lists that leaked out probably right after mid-January that had a whole list of words that can't be used, right, that you should not have as part of your initiatives. Unfortunately, those lists also contain the words women and female, which make it extremely hard to do the work we do for anyone. So 70% of the nonprofits surveyed expect further reduction in government funding. 45% see higher administrative burdens. And again, just to flag this, there are a lot of things that aren't even making the news that are coming out from like the Office of Budget Management or other places in the federal government.
The loss of millions of dollars in funding across the organizations stems from the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which Venegas referred to as House Bill 1 because, quote, I just cannot deal with the name or the acronym. funding for a range of services, including housing, domestic violence prevention, food and children's programs, has been scaled back. Ann Holcomb of NORCAN, formerly the executive director of Food for People, talked about the uncertainty of a new era of funding cuts.
You know, in conversations with people who say, yes, government's too big and we should cut it, you know, I don't think any of us totally disagree with that. I do think, though, that just going in and slashing things willy-nilly without having any time to examine what those ripple effects would be or which things really do make a lot of sense and have been proven statistically to make a huge difference in the quality of people's lives, it's just been hard to know where the next hits are coming from and how to prepare for them. When everything is such a big unknown, it makes it really difficult to try to figure out how you're going to navigate for your own organization and collectively, you know, within the sector.
Greg Foster of the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission hosted the meeting and noted the presentation's statistics on the numbers of people getting Medicaid and food stamp benefits in Humboldt, 75,000 and 40,000 respectively.
I mean, that's mind-boggling to me on a number of levels. A, the immediate impact that we're going to probably feel starting Saturday or Sunday when those benefits are cut off, but also just that it's that high. And I mean, that's even a staggering statistic more universally about Humboldt County and how much we rely on that stuff. And I've been particularly struck, I think, also, not that anyone deserves to be hungry or without shelter, of course, but that how many of those people are seniors. So we are, if you want to operate from what I think is the false assumption that all you have to do is go out and get work and you can get off of this, you know, and we're dealing with seniors and disabled, I think that's particularly cruel.
Despite the challenges, Venegas views Humboldt as a strong community. She said, quote, "Even despite many of the challenges we have being behind the Redwood Curtain, Humboldt is the place to be because we pull together really well, and no matter where we are in the political spectrum, we have a shared vision of what it takes to be a community." NORCAN will update the situation through a listserv and its website at norcal-nonprofits.com. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
As the government shutdown reaches 35 days, there are more questions than answers for people relying on government programs to survive. Thankfully, there are a lot of nonprofits and other organizations in Humboldt area going above and beyond to help the local community. There are different groups in Humboldt County making sure they are doing their part to support each other and the community. This includes food pantries, resource centers, and even local coffee shops, doing what they can while the government is shut down. The Department of Health and Human Services emailed KMUD details about what they are doing. Quote, "DHHS administration has met with our food pantry and family resource center partners to share what we know about the impacts due to the shutdown, as well as connected with staff about checking in on our most vulnerable population to see how we can ensure they have the latest information. We are also sharing resource materials with many of our other partners," end quote. Some of these services include Food for People, which is located at 307 West 14th Street in Eureka. They offer once-a-month food selections. Arcata House Food Pantry is located at 501 9th Street, Arcata, partnering with Food for People, helping serve Arcata and the surrounding areas. Blue Lake Rancheria Nutrition Program focuses on helping tribal members, elders, and children, offering multiple meal programs. St. Vincent de Paul, located at 35 West 3rd Street, Eureka, offers free meal services from between 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Speaking with Robert Santilli, the board president for Vincent St. De Paul, he talked about the community effort that is happening right now between all the local agencies.
We work with a couple of agencies down your way, Humboldt Provisions, and they're kind of tied in with Mateo. And periodically, they come up here. If we have surpluses of some of our food inventory, we give it to them. Humboldt Provisions usually gives out food to the encampments that surround Metro Garberville. That's the other thing. You have to network with the other agencies in your area because we all pull for one another. And certainly up here, we've got the Eureka Rescue Mission. We've got Salvation Army. We've got Teen Challenge. We've got Betty Chin and Arcata House Senior Resource Center, as well as major private businesses as partners, Costco, Winco. We get a lot of foodstuffs from them. Coca-Cola just dropped off a couple of pallets of beverages for us the other day. The Humboldt Creamery gave us a pallet of ice cream for the holidays the other day. Pacific Towing is going to give us 30 or 40 turkeys for Thanksgiving. So your partnerships have an invaluable aspect to how you operate as well.
Old Town Coffee and Chocolates are offering free meals from 7:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m., providing bagels, fruit, and other items that have been donated. K-Mud spoke with Moss Taylor, a supervisor and lead coffee roaster for Old Town Coffee, who explained their SNAP Special Snack initiative and the support they have received from the community.
We have experienced so much gratitude from the community, both people receiving the food and also other folks coming in and supporting the business to help us support this SNAP snack program. So there's really just been an outpour of gratitude from the community, which has been really, really beautiful to see and beautiful to be a part of. I would like to note that we are accepting donations. There's more information about that on our Instagram page, I believe at Old Town Coffee and Chocolates. But yeah, it's been a really fantastic experience so far.
Most of these nonprofits are relying on donations and whatever they have in their budget to continue supporting their communities. Speaking with Rhonda Lewis, the executive director of Fortuna Adventist Community Services and Heart Program, explained the importance of these programs while the government is unable to provide these resources. Fortuna Adventist Community Center serves people once every 3 months or in the case of emergencies. Right now, they are doing everything they can, but there are so many people that need these resources, and it is hard to keep up with the demand.
Obviously, while we are experiencing all of this up and down around the CalFresh food stamps, it's everybody has an emergency. So we're serving as many as we can. I have volunteers who work the program, so they're really only able to be open about 2 hours, 2 days a week, and which really backs up because you can only see so many people. And so they are extending their hours just a little bit to try and get more households served, but we're not able to serve nearly as many as are coming to our door. And I believe just this morning we had to close our line by 10:30. We opened up at 9:30 and we had to close our line at 10:30 because we had more people than my volunteers could serve. And, you know, people that were turned away were told, if you want to wait and see if there's time at the end, if these people are fast, then, you know, but there was several people who showed up either, you know, closer to our general closing time, which is 11:30, or were just, you know, it was just, we couldn't serve them because we didn't have enough time to make that happen.
Having the workforce is not the only problem Lewis is facing right now. Due to the amount of people dealing with an emergency, budgeting for the next couple of months is also a big problem.
I had some money set aside for our we usually spend about $10,000 for the Christmas food baskets and toys and stuff. And I have pulled half of that out to buy food this month. I'm praying that we get our deficits made up before it's time for Christmas. I'll figure something out. I don't know what, but Christmas may be a little bit lean, but at least they'll have food now. And we're going to, you know, stock up purchasing from places to try and keep food on our shelves. I know right now we're about ready to run out of canned fruit, and we have an order coming in, but not until after our food tomorrow. So, you know, it's just one of those things. We're going to do the best we can and pull funding from wherever we can, and hopefully the shippers aren't down for whatever reason and the shipments can make it into so that we can get our food restocked.
During this time of uncertainty, local community agents are forging ahead together. With the help of community donations and funding, they are able to continue giving people the services they desperately need. For more information for resources, visit humboldtgov.org. In state news, post-wildfires toxic smoke a lasting health concern in California, Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
Cutting-edge technology deployed in the wake of the LA fires is helping scientists understand the nature of the toxic smoke from urban wildfires. Researchers from UCLA, UC Davis, Harvard, and the University of Texas at Austin deployed what they call a sniffer van in the Pacific Palisades and Altadena for several weeks in February and May to measure air pollution in the burn zone. Chemist Pavel Mishtal, a professor at UT Austin, is using a supercomputer to analyze reams of data to identify hotspots and understand how different sources contribute to air pollution.
With every second, we see more than 1,000 different chemicals and how they change over time. So this novel way of mapping chemistry from an electric mobile van is game-changing.
Mishtal is part of the Los Angeles Fire Human Exposure and Long-Term Health Study, also known as LA Fire Health. Experts believe that toxins released in urban wildfires are potentially more carcinogenic and deadlier than smoke from other wildfires. The LA Fire Health team noticed people digging through the remnants of burned properties without proper protective equipment, breathing toxic airborne particles. Mishtal hopes this research will help local authorities guide residents as they return after future disasters.
Dilution is the solution to pollution in a way. The community needs to know when it is safe to ventilate and when it is not.
He advises homeowners to let the professionals handle remediation after a fire. They should open up and ventilate once the outdoor air has cleared, and he says people should remove anything that burned, especially from inside the house, because it can still off-gas chemicals and pollute the air for months. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, Trump administration partially funds SNAP food aid as government shutdown continues. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
The federal government shutdown entered day 34 Monday with a little bit of good news for some 42 million low-income people who rely on SNAP food assistance. The Trump administration announced Monday that it will partially fund the SNAP program after two federal judges issued rulings requiring payments to continue. But the rub is that it will only be a partial payment for November, and the money won't come right away. California Attorney General Rob Bonta gave his response in a news conference.
This is unprecedented. SNAP is an entitlement program. All eligible recipients are supposed to receive funding, and the Trump administration is choosing to only partially fund some. So they are deliberately starving some hungry Americans, and when they don't have to. And this will be the first time in the history of the United States in this program that this has happened.
He calls the Trump administration's action disgusting, dangerous, and damaging. And he thinks it's illegal. Governor Gavin Newsom agrees.
It's vulgar. There's a reason people are putting Marie Antoinette memes up there of Trump. Let him eat cake. Because that's how this feels.
Yeah.
He's betraying his own voters. Red districts, red and rural counties, red states that disproportionately are the beneficiaries of food stamps, disproportionately are going to be impacted.
According to court filings by the Trump administration, the government will pay 50% of eligible households' SNAP allotments for November. And that shortfall is not the only rub. It will also take some time for those partial payments to turn up for beneficiaries. Attorney General Bonta says that's a problem.
To get SNAP funding up and running for recipients who are already on the program, it takes about a week. So there's always a delay from the time that the Trump administration decides to pay someone until they actually get the food. And these are folks who are hungry, and every day matters, and it has a very damaging impact the more delay there is.
Top Democrats in the Senate were not satisfied with the Trump administration's commitment. Senator Patty Murray tweeted, "Just now paying the bare minimum to partially fund SNAP is not enough, and it is not acceptable." Senators debated the latest development on the Senate floor. Chuck Schumer is the Senate Democratic leader.
Everyone can get full benefits. The only person standing in the way is Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Even after the courts have spoken, the administration continues to use kids, seniors, disabled Americans, and working parents as political pawns, dangling the threat of hunger over their heads.
Democratic senators have offered a resolution to fully fund SNAP during the shutdown, but that met with Republican opposition. John Barrasso of Wyoming is a Senate Republican whip.
When end the food assistance cliff? It's easy. Pass the clean bipartisan continuing resolution. Democrats should vote for it immediately. Until then, Mr. President, the Schumer shutdown is going to continue to hurt struggling families. Therefore, Mr. President, I object.
As of now, people on SNAP aid will keep waiting to see when and how much aid they'll get. And the federal government shutdown continues on its path to becoming the longest shutdown in the nation's history. Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In national native news, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Navajo Nation is bracing for the gap in SNAP benefits. It's yet another food insecurity problem for tribal members living on the sprawling reservation. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio has more.
With only a dozen or so stores throughout the nation, buying groceries is already a daily struggle. But letting benefits lapse could make their dilemma much worse. A third of Navajo households depend on SNAP today. Thomas Cody is with the Navajo Division of Child and Family Services.
We're 400,000 strong, and we can get through this together.
Meanwhile, the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma has declared a state of emergency
due to this federally imposed food crisis.
Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. made almost $7 million available. As for the Navajo Nation, Cody says it's unclear whether they'll follow suit.
We're coordinating right now with our legislators and our executive branch. And I don't know if it will be a declaration, but we're exploring all avenues to assist our people.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
On Monday, the Cherokee Nation announced the expansion of its Emergency Cash Assistance Program to all Cherokee Nation citizens on SNAP nationwide. The tribe says it will adjust payments as the federal government partially pays benefits in November. The deadline to apply is November 14th. In a recent ceremony, clan leaders and carvers dedicated the latest pole in Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Kutia Dei Juno's Totem Pole Trail. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has more.
Inside the clan house in the Walter Soboff building, Suktinadi clan members stand in front of a large poster depicting a totem pole that represents their clan history. They offer thanks to other clans, carvers, and SHI leadership. The actual pole, called Akutia and Tlingit, was raised near Juneau's Overstreet Park, but organizers held the dedication inside due to weather. Edward Thomas is Suktinadi, and he says he's excited to see his clan join the handful of others already represented by the Kutia Dei.
As I look at the walk of the totem pole along the waterfront here, I'm proud to see that all of our clans are being represented.
Thomas went on to thank the carver, Lee Wallace, and his apprentices for the thought and work they put into the pole. Wallace is a Haida master carver and lives in Saxman. But he says this Kutia is a part of his family's legacy, too.
My great-grandfather has a totem pole in the state building, Dwight Wallace. My grandfather, John Wallace, has a totem pole that was outside the city museum. So now with this particular Kutia pole, there's three generations of Wallace totem poles standing here in Juneau.
Wallace was helped by apprentices, including his son, Charles Peel. And Peel holds the youngest member of the carving team, his five-year-old daughter, Dodd Senga Elizabeth, as he describes the design of the pole.
And at the top, we have the current clan leaders. We want to acknowledge that this is the representation of a living people, that this isn't just something that's from the past. This is something that's tying history together. We often look at totem poles as things that are coming back from the past, and we wanted to add a piece that represents the present.
Below the current clan leaders, the pole features a spirit man, raven, and a box that represents the abundance of knowledge and history held in the Suktinadi clan, whose homelands are near Cake. At the base is the clan crest, dog salmon swimming in tall grasses. The National Park Service funded this pole. SHI plans to raise a total of 30 poles along Juneau's waterfront. So far, 13 poles have been installed. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cromery.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Nat Cardos, Daniel Mintz, Suzanne Potter, Christopher Martinez, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org, now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by the Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zucker.